This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
This episode is also brought to you by our good friends at Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, they've been a place to grow, connect, and serve. If you're looking for a church to participate with virtually during this COVID-19 lockdown, you can find their streaming services Sundays at 9 a.m. on their website or their Facebook page, and check in with their Facebook page throughout the week for encouragement, service times, and other good news. Visit them at canbyfoursquare.com or search Canby Foursquare on Facebook.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The state of Oregon will not begin the process of reopening in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic until Governor Kate Brown believes it is safe to do so. She said as much during a press conference Tuesday, where she introduced her framework for a plan to restart public life and business while maintaining healthy communities. The framework sets, quote, specific prerequisites based on science, which Oregon communities must meet to begin reopening, and also outlines the actions she believes the state must take to move forward. The path, in her words, will be a cautious one.
We know that a vaccine or an effective treatment may yet be months away. And if we move too quickly, we will see a spike in cases that could lead to an overwhelmed hospital system and unnecessary deaths. We all want to get back to work and return to life as normal as quickly as possible. But the truth is, the best path forward is a cautious one, a path that proceeds gradually, incrementally, and carefully, a path that relies on science and facts to determine each step forward.
She said she will not consider reopening communities until Oregon shows a declining rate in active cases of COVID-19 and public health data suggest a return to normalcy is safe. She also wants to ensure the state has enough hospital beds and personal protective equipment to treat any surge of COVID-19 cases that results from easing the stay-at-home restrictions. Once these prerequisites are met, Governor Brown said she would begin to reopen communities by ramping up COVID-19 testing capacity in every region of the state, developing a robust contact tracing system to track and contain the virus, and establishing a quarantine and isolation strategy for handling new cases. This is going to move much slower than any of us want, she said later on Twitter, but that is the only way to protect the health and safety of Oregonians. Governor Brown, Governor Gavin Newsom of California, and Governor Jay Inslee of Washington announced on Monday their plan to follow a shared vision for reopening their economies and controlling COVID-19 into the future. That same day, 7 East Coast states also announced their intentions to take a regional approach. The two announcements seemed to prompt pushback from President Donald Trump, who tweeted that it would be up to him when states reopen, but that he was working closely with governors to establish a timeline and make those decisions. Following the governor's press conference, House Republican leader Christine Drazen of Canby released a statement calling on Brown to, quote, give Oregonians a real plan to move toward reopening the economy. Let's do this the Oregon way, Representative Drazen said. We cannot give authority to other states. What works in Los Angeles will not work for us in Enterprise. As we see predictions of the worst recession since the Great Depression, it is essential that we prioritize the unique aspects of this state and our communities. We cannot stand still and allow uncertainty and deferred leadership to sink our state any further into poverty and despair. To date, no Canby Fire District or Canby Police Department personnel have tested positive for the novel coronavirus, and Fire Chief Jim Davis believes they have Canby residents to thank for that. Our fire medics who have been and will be called to possible COVID-19 calls are doing their very best to stay safe, Davis said in an April 15th letter to the community that was shared with the Canby Now podcast. Remember, these men and women from Canby Fire also have families to protect and support. The safety measures that you have taken continue to make a difference. Social distancing is working in Canby, Chief Davis said. COVID-related or suspected calls are up, but local first responders are able to handle the increased load. In a community update on Wednesday, he thanked Canby residents for their diligence in following the guidelines, despite the sacrifices they require and the difficult consequences they may have. In the end, it will be worth it, he said.
I know I have dealt with that and miss very terribly my five kids and my eight grandkids in just the fact that not being able to see them, but my wife is compromised as well as my mother-in-law who's living at our house. It'll be worth it at the end. We can tell you that your efforts are working and that we are flattening the curve, so thank you. Canby and the state must not relax or stay home, stay safe. We have not reached our peak. The county EMS division is anticipating the peak sometimes in between now and the end of April to the beginning of May. That target continues to move, but I can tell you it is working.
Chief Davis said he agrees with Oregon Governor Kate Brown on several things that need to happen before Oregon can reopen. Slow the growth of active cases. Ensure enough protective equipment is available for first responders and other workers who are more likely to be exposed. Ramp up testing and make testing much more available statewide. Develop a system to accurately predict areas of outbreak and implement an effective, consistent quarantine strategy for those who test positive. Hey, so Canby, do you remember, I don't know, like a million years ago, way back in February? Canby dismissed their new city administrator 4 months into his new job, and they never said why. Do you remember that? Well, it was kind of a big deal back then, you know, before the world ended and all. Well, the apocalypse notwithstanding, Canby still needs a new city administrator. The city is reusing the same executive search firm that landed them their previous administrator, Scott McClure. The search firm, Peckham & McKinney, is a highly regarded outfit, and it didn't hurt that they agreed to conduct a new recruitment process at no additional charge except for direct expenses. In a virtual meeting earlier this month, the firm accepted responsibility and apologized for last year's failed recruitment. Again, I'm just very disappointed that we're here, Chief Operating Officer Phil McKinney told Mayor Brian Hodson and the Canby City Council. I'm very disappointed that a severance package had to be put into play. I am sorry to have caused that for you, and I'm sorry to be coming back to do this process again. Ample time was spent discussing whether the city should raise the advertised salary range for the position from $125,000 to $150,000. Last year's recruitment was advertised nationwide, but ultimately attracted only two finalists for the position, both from smaller cities in Oregon. If raising the range another $25,000 or so would dramatically increase the talent pool while also making Canby more competitive with other cities who are recruiting administrators, most councilors seem to be in favor. At this point, I'm not interested in saving pennies. I'm interested in saving the city, Councilor Greg Parker said. Councilor Sarah Spoon said she remembers one early candidate who was particularly qualified during last year's recruitment, but who dropped out after getting a better offer from somewhere else.
Yeah, no, I agree with Greg. I mean, I think I wonder in retrospect if we could have gotten some better candidates the first time around if we were more in line with the other cities that we're competing with for the best pool of candidates. And I remember specifically the one that I was most excited about. On paper, he ended up not even continuing with the interview because he had an opportunity somewhere else. And so I just want to make sure that we're competitive as an employer. Because we're a seat administrator strong city, and because we are missing department heads and we need someone really capable. And if that costs us more money to put us in line with the other cities, then I think that's the appropriate move. So
a successful hiring could also save the city money in the long run. McClure received a severance package of 6 months' salary, or $75,000, along with a lump sum payment for 6 months' worth of health insurance when he was dismissed 4 months into his tenure in February. McKinney agreed to conduct a salary survey and make recommendations about whether the range should be increased and by how much. They call it the Quarantini. It's just like a regular martini, but you drink it alone in your house. This and other all-day drinking coronavirus memes you've probably seen making the rounds on social media lately offered evidence that Governor Kate Brown's closure of bars across the state did little to quench Oregonians' thirst for alcohol. As they say, you can lead a horse to a quarantine, but you can't make him not drink. If you needed more proof, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, or OLCC, reported that the state liquor stores it licenses sold almost $60 million in distilled spirits last month, a new record for March and a 44% increase from the same period last year. Oh, we have been very busy, Canby Liquor Store co-owner Andy Dorn told the Canby Now podcast last month during a visit by a reporter that was purely investigative in nature and definitely did not involve us doing our own stocking up. Tyler, you can keep lying to these good listeners, but I'm here to out you. That was Tyler Frankie at the Canby Now Liquor Store. It actually is making things difficult to keep liquor on the shelves, says Andy Dorn. The local store has done brisk sales while embracing its status as a, quote, essential business, installing plexiglass screens and other measures to protect staff and customers while offering the latest information on a chalk blackboard by the front door, where they also provide what we strongly suspect to be homemade hand sanitizer. Despite the sharp increase, OLCC says the numbers primarily reflect a shift in consumption rather than an increase. People are drinking roughly the same amounts of alcohol, they're just doing it at home instead of the local watering holes. Sales at locations licensed for on-premise consumption, those are bars and restaurants, were down 53% from the previous year, the OLCC reported. The sharp decline for licenses resulted in overall liquor sales showing 20% higher than in March 2019, a less dramatic spike than what was seen at liquor stores alone. Though March 2020 will certainly be one to remember, it's still about $10 million shy of the all-time monthly sales record of $75.85 million. And that mark was set all those years ago in December of 2019. Canby students are back to school this week, though it's happening without a single one needing to leave their homes. Monday marked the launch of Distance Learning for All at the Canby School District, a new model of fully remote teaching and learning that the Oregon Department of Education is requiring districts to use for the remainder of the academic year. In an email to district families the previous Friday, Superintendent Tripp Goodall said the district was excited to return to engaging with students, even though it, quote, will look much different than what any of us are used to. The district's distance learning model incorporates a mix of online and offline instruction, including printed materials, email, phone calls, and Google Classroom. Some instructors may use video, but these will be pre-recorded, not live, and broadcasted at a certain time. To assist parents and students, the district has created a new website that provides access to offline learning packets, weekly schedules by grade level, and information on how to get support with technology. School leaders and teachers will continue to communicate directly about specific assignments. The model also uses printed packets that are available for pickup at the schools at designated times. In a message to families this week, Canby School Board Chair Angie Dilks acknowledged the frustration, fear, and uncertainty many parents feel embarking into what is uncharted territory for many. Dilks said, "This system will not be perfect. The good news, we all want the best for the students of Canby. We're resilient, we're creative, and we are determined. Though none of us have ever tried to endure during a global pandemic, we will get through this and our students will continue to learn." For a link to the Distance Learning for All portal, find the story on our website at canbynowpod.com. Pure Seed, a global leader in grass seed research, production, marketing, and services based in Canby, has disputed the Department of Environmental Quality's claims this week that they risked human health and the environment by alleged mismanagement of hazardous waste. The DEQ issued a civil penalty of $22,500 against Pure Seed for violations stemming from October and November of 2018, primarily related to a seed and limestone mixture they say also contained Apron XL, a fungicide that could be harmful if consumed. The DEQ claimed the company had mislabeled this product at its facility on Barlow Road and also failed to immediately clean up spilled amounts of the material inside and outside the building. They also said the company provided 60 cubic yards of the material to a farm in Estacada, which stored it in the open in a, quote, large pile and allowed cattle to graze on and around it. In response, Pure Seed provided the following statements to the Canby Now podcast, which disputes many of the state's claims, including that there was ever any harm to people, animals, or the environment. And I quote, "Pure Seed has been an outstanding member and employer of the Canby area agricultural community for over 5 decades. At Pure Seed, we produce, process, and ship seed to more than 50 countries around the world. We also coat and package grass seed for the USA retail market. Late in 2018, the Oregon Department of Agriculture brought to our team's attention that due to a technicality, a byproduct was being mislabeled coming out of our coating facility. This material was largely organic matter with trace elements of soil enhancers, promoting soil and plant health, not degradation. Despite our disagreement with the ODA and the DEQ, our team acted promptly and thoroughly to have this matter resolved within days. We took full responsibility and took every necessary action to assure this issue was resolved. There was zero harm to the environment." Though the company had the option to appeal the matter after receiving the DEQ letter in February, marketing director Nick Layton said they chose not to because they felt it wasn't worth the fight. He said, quote, "We chose to fix the problem and move on."
The Canby Now podcast is brought to you in part by DirectLink, where technology meets tradition. Canby's longest-running and most innovative communications provider for over 116 years, DirectLink has worked hard to bring quality services to the area at affordable prices. From establishing phone lines in the early 1900s to being the first gigabit internet speed provider in Oregon, DirectLink paves the way for new technology so our neighbors can stay connected. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
Hey friends, it's me, James, again, back for, as always, my personal favorite part of the show, in which we get to celebrate the coolest people in the world. Of course, you know them now as the Canby Now Plus members. And this week, we're giving our undying gratitude to Desmarie Johnson, because Desmarie is one of the many who are monthly contributors who continue to help us do this work that we really love. Especially during times of pandemic, accurate, timely, and lively journalism is part of the heartbeat of a vibrant community of Canby that we know and love. And so if you would like to help assist us in the mission of bringing quality journalism to you for free, participate in the Canby Now Plus program. You can become one of our supporters on Patreon. Visit us at canbynowpod.com/plus to sign up. And Desmarie, thank you. We really appreciate it.
On the Canby Conversation today, we're joined by Ray Keen of the Canby Center. I was wondering if you could start us off by just describing what we just witnessed here today.
So today we have our drive-through food pantry going, and it is a long line of cars coming to the Canby Center to pick up food. We check them in, and then they're able to access food like milk and eggs, chicken, vegetables, and dried goods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you normally do a weekly, this weekly thing on Tuesday, and this time you've upped to Saturday, right? And you're seeing quite increased demand. Tell us a little bit about how things have changed with this food distribution, and then we'll talk a little bit more widely about how things have changed here at the Canby Center.
Sure. Yeah. A typical week for us before COVID-19 looked like about 60 families a week. Mm-hmm. And that has changed for us in this time to 217 families per week.
More than tripled.
Yes.
Yeah.
So big change for us with regard to the number of people who are coming and the challenges that they're facing. Some of the folks who are seeing us have recently been laid off or have faced other challenges with their business. So we're there for them in this time. It's really important that the community step up and be present to help. And this is a picture of that, I believe. When you look at our community volunteers out there serving people, you've got the fire department the police department out serving as well. It's just a great picture of community.
Yeah, absolutely. You got donations still coming in, even as we were out there, got the truck rolling in with new food and stuff. How have things changed procedurally? Because obviously the increased demand is a huge driver, but then there's this virus that we all have to worry about. How has that affected?
Yeah, it's been a radical change for us, like it has been for everyone.
Yeah, the food share program looks very different right
yes,
now.
Yes, it does.
Not just because of the numbers.
Normally, people come and shop inside for food, and they're able to pick out, like you would in the grocery store, to pick out what they can use. But now we've had to move to a boxed approach where we do a big banana box full of food, plus the milk and eggs and chicken. And so people are getting good food right now, but it is a different procedure by a long margin. So when you think about it before, it was inside and people would come through and shop in a line, but they were in close proximity to each other and we mm-hmm. couldn't maintain that. So now people pull up in their car and we have a cart that's been sanitized. We load it with the food and then people are able to load themselves that food into their car at three stations. And it's less contact, people, person-to-person contact. And then once that cart has been, the food's been picked up, we bring the cart back to the end of the line and it gets sanitized. And then more food goes on it for the next car. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a different process for us. Beyond all that, you know, it's taking temperatures of our volunteers when they come in to the Canby Center to make sure they don't have a fever. Mm-hmm. It is, checking in on making sure everybody's washing their hands and gloving up and wearing masks as they're serving, especially in a front lines approach.
Yeah. How have the volunteers and the staff kind of reacted to some of those changes?
Everybody has been amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, they have really moved from what I would say was a really fast paced environment. The Canby Center's always been busy.
Right.
But we have moved to a completely different level now. And the staff have done an incredible job of adapting to that. Our volunteers have done an incredible job of adapting to that. I had a lady who was volunteering yesterday to pack the food boxes for today. And she just popped her head into my office and she said, "Ray, I just want you to know, if you ever need help, just call me." Now, this was after she had been here serving for 4 hours.
Right.
So people are going above and beyond what they might normally do to serve and give back to others. And I think in part they're doing that because it really feels good to help people. Mm-hmm. And in part they're doing that because they know that there's true need here. So it's just been incredible to see the team move from really a fast-paced working group to what I would call a high-performance team. Our team now is adapting to 7 to 10 changes a day in our procedures, This Wednesday, we'll get a Connex box, which is a refrigerated food box dropped off to have a walk-in cooler on site.
Oh, cool.
City of Canby has loaned us their forklift.
Mm.
We're now buying food in pallets and getting those offloaded from flatbed trucks. It's a vastly different procedure, and everybody's job here has changed. They've done an amazing job adapting to that.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't really the time to wax philosophic, but, you know, people, I think, have that whole a need for purpose. And I think that in normal times, we see some problems even societally when people don't feel needed or don't feel like they have a purpose. You know, that can be an emotional and even a spiritual difficulty for people. And in times like this, that's not as big of a need, or that's not as problematic, because, you know, maybe the government actually comes and says you are essential or you're just in a position as a volunteer or a worker where things are so much busier, and it's just obvious even to you that you are needed and fulfilling an important purpose. Before we transition to more about how things have changed in the Canby Center, I wanted to ask you, can you explain the need here, or the importance of this work that you guys are doing, of you know, why you know, it was so important to not only continue what you're doing, but to expand it, to figure out ways, very different ways in some ways, to make it safe.
In God's love, we renew dignity and inspire learning for youth and families. That's our mission.
Mm.
And really, it's our mission that comes first. First and foremost, in a time like this, with all of the chaos and change and difficulty, it's important that our mission stay the central focus for what we do.
Mm.
So that means a lot of things for us. Number one, kind of getting emotional and sharing about it, but in number one, that people know that we're here for them as a representation, as a picture, as a tangible way to understand God's love for them.
Hmm.
That is present now. It hasn't gone away. In fact, when you look outside and you see what's happening right now, it's increased. It has found a new expression in this time. So it is God's love that motivates us to serve and care for people. And we know that that shines through in what we do. We also think it's super important that people, in a time when dignity is being diminished by COVID-19, mm-hmm. by perhaps job loss for people or other challenges that they're facing in their family, trying to figure out how to educate their kids at home, all those pieces present challenge and sometimes can be a real challenge to a person's self-worth and their dignity. And so at the Canby Center, we have a focus on renewing dignity. And that sometimes happens on a day-to-day basis with days like today, where we are able to care for people. And as they take that food home and put it into their refrigerator, they're able to remember that they have value. They do have worth, that it matters that they're here, and because we care for them and because they are loved. And so on the other side of COVID-19, as we perhaps in the coming months get out of this rhythm and into a new one, I think it'll be really important in our work for us to be positioned in a place to be able to help these families take steps again toward sustainable living.
Mm.
So that's a renewal of dignity process too. It might be life skills classes on finances, or on employment and how to secure a new job, or how to write your resume, or how to interview well. We'll be focused on those things in the coming months also.
Yeah.
So big picture for us is mission first, and that's what we're focused on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good transition, because I wanted to ask one thing that I've always loved and really appreciated and admired about your guys' work here at the Canby Center is how that holistic approach that you take to the person and or to the family, that it's not just, well, here's some food, good luck. You know what I mean? Like you do the life classes and the parenting classes, and there's clothes, and I'm sure that's still going on as well. But there's you do the job interview and professional development services and all kinds of stuff here. When this hit, I know you said you suspended something like a dozen of the 16 programs, and it just became, no, right now the critical need is food. Can you explain that decision-making process? And was that difficult?
On about March 3rd, we sat down as a team and we developed a response to COVID-19, a mitigation plan.
Early.
And it was pretty early for us.
Five cases at that point.
Yep. And I have to give kudos to one of our staff members, Kathleen, who really was bringing it to my attention because she was on the front end of it with our Reading Mentors program.
Okay.
And she was beginning to be concerned for our elderly volunteers, primarily elderly in the Reading Mentors program, who are coming in and interacting with kids in the school system.
Wow.
Schools hadn't made a decision yet.
Right.
It would be another few days, I think maybe a week before the schools would close.
Yeah.
But we sat down and we set up a plan. We developed five stages of closure for the Canby Center. And what amazed me is that we needed that plan, number one, and we needed it quicker than I would have ever guessed.
Yeah.
When we sat down and developed the plan, I thought to myself, if this gets implemented, it's going to be over 3 or 4 months.
Right.
And I thought the reality is it probably won't get fully implemented.
Yeah.
Well, we moved through stage one in the first week to stage two to stage three to stage four within really a matter of about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's where we sit now, is at stage four, which is primarily
so
a focus on food.
Yeah, sorry. It's so funny looking back because, like, looking back, that's just, like, so obvious, you know, because we've gotten to this point. But at that time, it would have been crazy to imagine schools closed, theaters closed, all these businesses closed,
yeah.
Economic recession, record high unemployment. I mean, no one was thinking any of that on March 3rd.
No, exactly. That's exactly right. So, you know. But what I loved about that process is it prepared us to take the next steps when we needed to take them. So stage one for us, for example, was what everybody was doing in a business. If you had one open at the time, you were buying Lysol wipes and you were wiping and sanitizing and doing more cleaning than you would normally
right,
do.
Right.
But we moved really quickly from just extra cleaning to thinking about what needs to close, which programs, and in what order.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, I have described it that, you know, 90% of our energy now is really going toward our food programming.
Yeah.
So when somebody comes to us and needs food, we're getting them food.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the sort of philosophical or strategic reason that even in your plan, that was stage four, that was, if we got to that point, we're going to transition into being this primarily?
Well, if you're familiar with, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
sure.
You know, when you think of the most essential needs that people have, it is for things like food and shelter, you know, some of the basics of just what does it take to survive. Some of the programming that we typically
can lead into thinking about higher needs.
Yes,
you can't
yes.
think about education or whatever if
That's
you're
right.
hungry. You
That's
know?
Right.
Yeah.
And in a way, when you think of sort of triaging, coming back to the essentials, those are the essentials. And so we began to move through things at the top of the list that we could move off or change. So, for example, we believe it's really important that people have a connection with God in some way that's meaningful for them. So we make that available to people in a variety of our programs. And in the food pantry now, we've pivoted where our devotional that usually would be spoken as we do a food pantry is now done in writing beforehand. So pastors in the community, staff and volunteers are taking time to write those out, type them up, and then they get translated into English, from English into Spanish, and they go out to each person who comes to us. But we do that because there's value in each of those layers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Even at the higher end in this kind of a time. But we have to find ways to do that doesn't put people at risk.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so much for explaining the process that got us to this point. Thank you, obviously, for the incredible work you and your team and volunteers are doing. I know, and you mentioned kind of the community at the beginning of this that makes it all possible. I know I've heard, even as this is going, you know, how can I volunteer? What does a Canby Center need? You know, stuff like that. So can you answer some of those questions? How can folks help if they want to be part of this important work that's going on here?
Yeah, there's a great way to do that at thecanbycenter.org. That's our website, thecanbycenter.org. You can go on and you'll see a section right at the top on our homepage that says COVID-19. And there's three buttons to click. One has to do with if you have needs, if you need food, you click the button and you'll get resources. Another one is about ways to give back. So if you'd like to give to our work, you can do that through that button. And then there's a button for volunteer. If you click the button and fill out the form on the next page, we'll get in touch with you about service opportunities. It's a bit of a dance for us right now because we need enough staff to be fully equipped to serve the people coming to us. But we don't want so many people that we've got, you know, 50 people gathered in a small space.
Right.
So we have to be careful with who we say yes to. So if we're not getting back to you, that may be why.
Yeah.
But I know from day to day, it varies for us. And we reach out to different people at different times to fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. So if you fill out that form, we might reach out to you.
Yeah. Cool. Have you had a time, Ray, in the past month and all the craziness to sort of take a breath and reflect? And if you have, is there a moment or a story that sort of come to your mind that's really either emblematic of the craziness that can kind of encapsulate that, or that has given you hope or encouragement?
There are many, many moments along the way where I feel like there has been a word or a picture of encouragement or inspiration for me personally. Mm. One of those pictures in my mind is right now, if you were to look in our main space, our main room that we use for packing boxes now, it looks much more like a food packing plant.
Yeah.
It has an assembly line running down the middle. There's tons of boxes and pallets of food. It didn't look like that 2 or 3 months ago. And back in December and January, we made the choice to seek funding to change out some of our doors at the Canby Center.
One of those
we changed runs from our garage and into the big room. And it's just a man door. It would be like the door that you'd have going to your bathroom. It was small.
Yeah.
And we could kind of squeeze a cart through there of food, but there was no way you were going to move a pallet of food through there. We happened to think about changing those doors, and we put in a double wide door in December with the help of many people. And now I can see why that came to us at that time. Mm-hmm. We need it now to move pallets and pallets of food through on a pallet jack. Without those doors, we would be trying to unload every pallet and reload it back onto pallets in the big room. It would be a nightmare. So encouraging to see little pictures like that of really, I believe, God's provision. Mm. Others stepping up in the community. We got calls this week from Willamette Egg Farm. They've got changes in their industry because the restaurants aren't purchasing as many eggs.
Right.
So they're going to be sending about 300 boxes of food, 45 pounds each, this Saturday, filled with potatoes and eggs and just all kinds of great stuff. So I just think of businesses that are already feeling the financial hit and have been impacted, who are turning around and finding ways to be incredibly generous in this time. We've had people walk up to our cars while they're in line getting food and hand out cash.
Yeah.
And as we're yelling out across the street to say, thank you, you know, the guy said, oh, I wish I could do more. Mm. And I think everybody feels that in this time. But to see that sense of generosity and compassion come through people has really put wind in my sails.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing those moments of hope as well. It gives me a lot of hope, even just day to day, and definitely for the other side, because that's a concern, you know, as we start to kind of look forward, what is life gonna look like on the other side? And hearing stuff like that makes me think we're gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ray.
Of course.
Joining us once again on the Canby Now podcast is Derek Hill of Advantage Mortgage. He joins us on the line, of course. How are things in the industry right now with all the crazy stuff going on?
You know, it's a little crazy, but not too crazy. I mean, we definitely have seen some things tighten up. Obviously, with any kind of uncertainty, banks tend to tighten their guidelines. So the great thing about being a broker is that even though some of our lenders are tightening up, we have others that aren't. We have a lot of lenders that are just status quo. They're like, hey, we still have all the same channels. We still have all the same credit score requirements. You know, interest rates may be a little bit higher because of the level of risk, but they're still funding loans. So actually March was one of the biggest months of our company's funding. So
wow, you
know, we're still funding loans. There's still people out there buying. There's still people out there selling. We have to make sure that we're not, you know, spreading the virus and whatnot. But yeah, everything's still moving along.
Cool. So how can people get in touch with you right now?
The easiest way is just call the office, 503-266-5800, or send us an email, derek@findtheadvantage.com. But just call the office and we'd be happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks, Derek. Hang in there.
All right. You as well. Derek Hill, NMLS 50183, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Joining us on the line now is Alexis Purcell, returning to the Cambie Now podcast. She's the director of the Cambie Farmers Market in her second year, and what a year it's shaping up to be. I can't wait to hear about what's planned and what it's going to look like this year, but first just want to check in with you. I know you've got kids, you're dealing with the whole school being closed and all that stuff. How are you holding up, Alexis?
We're hanging in there. It's been definitely an interesting couple of weeks, and you know, we're just looking for some routine.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think we all are, and one routine that's going to be returning here is the Saturday Cambie Farmers Market.
Yes.
Let me start by just, I know a question you got when you first started, you know, posting about this again and announcing the new dates. People were like, whoa, farmer's market, wait a minute, I thought we weren't allowed to do any of this stuff. So why don't I let you address that to start with?
Yeah, I mean, we're just trying to figure out how to make it all go around, you know? I mean, we're not used to social distancing and all that good stuff, but we're ready to go. So we have a good plan in place and it should be pretty good.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, and basically the restrictions, for gatherings and events, I think people kind of put it in their heads that the farmers market is like, I don't know, like the fair or something, you know, that are
right.
banned right now because of group sizes. But, yeah. The market is, part of that is, I mean, it's a way to get food, right?
Yeah, it's technically deemed essential. People still need to have groceries and goods and whatnot. So we kind of lucked out there, you know, we're deemed essential. So here we go. And it's another option for people to get out and go get their groceries and support your local farmers, which is always fantastic. We're going to spread everybody out, and hopefully we've got a little bit of a plan in place for the market. We're going to do things kind of different. The first 2 hours, I think we're going to try and open an hour early and do a drive-through market.
Oregon oh, really?
Farmers, yeah. So Oregon City Farmers Market did it last week, and they had phenomenal numbers, which was great. And we went, we checked it out. We're going to check out PSU this weekend and kind of see how they're running things. But I think it'll be a good option. That way more people can get out and feel like they really don't have to get out of their car and pick out what they want and get it on the go.
Okay. Okay. What will that look like process wise? Do they sort of drive booth to booth and stop and browse from the car?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know if you like sort of order in advance and then you just pick it up or what?
We're gonna do a one lane down Holly, right in front of the coffee shop, and you're gonna be able to stop at each booth and pick out what you want, run your card, and you're on your way.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So we haven't really finalized everything yet, but it's gonna be good.
Okay.
I think.
Cool. So it'll be a mix of that. You're gonna try that for the first, you said, couple of hours, and then it'll revert back a little bit to the more standard walk-up market that we're used to, but with some different restrictions as well. What kind of plans do you have in place for what that would look like?
Well, you know, we'll have lots of signage, and we'll have all of our vendors will be 3 feet apart, and we'll have hand washing stations and all that good stuff. So we're super prepared. We're really excited. I mean, I know with the good weather, people are really, really wanting to get out, or
oh my gosh, so antsy. Yeah.
So it'll be good. And we have a bunch of stuff planned for this season. So, you know, Heaven Sent Nursery is going to do a raffle with Benchmade knives and for Father's Day. And we've got some cool giveaways going and some kids planting projects and whatnot. So that should be great.
Cool, cool. Well, I'm really excited you guys are moving forward. You mentioned that it's a way to help the small local businesses and the local farms, which a lot of them are really struggling right now, like a lot of businesses, you know, whether they are specifically ordered to close, you know, like restaurants and things have a lot of restrictions on them, or just the overall difficulty of the current economic outlook that's hurting a lot of businesses and a lot of sectors. This is one great way to really support the folks locally that are doing some really cool stuff or making really good food.
Definitely. We've got a lot of great farms coming this year. Red Chair Farm, Parsons Farms will be back.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, we've got a lot of good options, and we're just hoping that Cambia will really like show its shining colors and come down and support it this year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, you know, just a chance to get outside, you know, with all the nice weather. You can go outside, you can get some good food, support local businesses, and hopefully do it. I feel like, you know, you try to go for a walk or something and you're afraid somebody's going to accuse you of being a murderer or post your picture on Facebook somewhere. So yeah, this is something that is being encouraged, you know, to do it safely, obviously, but it's as you said, essential and a continuation of a great local tradition. Are you sensing some excitement from those vendors you mentioned and from the farms, just a chance to you know, return to normalcy a little bit, like you've alluded to, or even just for them to get outside of their homes a little bit and engage with humans?
Definitely. I think everybody's really ready, including myself. Yeah, I mean, it's a chance for people to get out there and buy their goods and, you know, catch a little bit of the being a home break, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we're ready.
I gotta tell you, Alexa, I am so sick of talking to people through a screen or through a phone. Like, I would really love some human interaction that doesn't involve one of my children, as much as I love them. But
exactly.
Very cool. So let's remind folks, because last year we did move the location. You've mentioned it. We're on Holly Street, in front of Gwen's, and continuing down as far as Waite Park and in front of the old library. Is that right?
Yep, that is correct.
Okay, so that's between 2nd and 3rd, I think?
Yep.
Okay. And the hours?
Hours are going to be from 8 to 1, with the first couple of markets we'll have the drive-through service from 8 to 10. And then, it goes until 1 o'clock. So hopefully we'll see some smiling faces.
Mm-hmm. Well, you maybe not with the mask, but
maybe not, right?
You see the eye crinkles, and you can right. kind of tell sometimes. So awesome. Alexis and the Cambia's Farmers Market is very, very active on Facebook. Definitely hit them up for the latest information there. And do you guys have a website?
We do not at the moment. We're okay. just using Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, but very, very active on there. Well, Alexis, best of luck to you starting May 9th. So here in a few weeks, we'll definitely be out there if I can survive that long, stuck at home with my kids. And again, appreciate all your hard work and anything that we can do to support, just let us know.
Perfect. Thank you, Tyler.
Cambi Then is brought to you by The Book Nook, Cambi's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It is your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, well, all things books, you get the idea. They're across from the Backstop Bar and Grill in downtown Cambi. And of course, as always, please support our unique and locally owned businesses as much as you can during this difficult time, especially businesses like The Book Nook. Well, when Governor Kate Brown ordered statewide school closures last month, it was not the first time in Cambia history that schools were closed to fight the effects of a global pandemic. It was actually the second. It also happened in October 1918 as the world was reeling from the impacts of history's deadliest epidemic, a strain of H1N1 more commonly known as the Spanish flu. Schools were closed on Wednesday morning, October 23, 1918, by the order of Canby Mayor W.H. Baer, who was acting on instructions from the state health officer, Robert E. Holt. Holt was, in turn, taking his cue from the Surgeon General of the United States, who had, quote, directed that all public meetings as well as schools and theaters be closed forthwith to combat the worldwide epidemic of Spanish influenza, which is what the Canby Herald recorded. The schools, and particularly the toilets, maybe they ran out of toilet paper too, were to be thoroughly cleaned with formaldehyde and chloride of lime and fumigated. Where the disease originated was unknown, but because newspapers in Spain had been the first to cover it, it was dubbed the Spanish influenza, or Spanish flu for short. The first wave of the 1918 pandemic occurred in the early spring and was generally mild. The sick, who experienced such typical flu symptoms as chills, fever, and fatigue, usually recovered after several days, and the number of reported deaths was low. However, a second and highly contagious wave of the influenza appeared with a vengeance in the fall of that same year. Victims died within hours or days of developing symptoms, their skin turning blue and their lungs filling with fluid that caused them to suffocate. From the start of the year 1918 to the end, the average life expectancy in America plummeted by a dozen years. The symptoms started with a fever like the common cold. Unlike measles or smallpox, there were no outward signs of the infection. As the sickness intensified, so did the pain. Patients would cough blood and start to turn blue from a lack of oxygen. A lethal type of pneumonia set in and caused an uncontrollable hemorrhaging that filled the lungs, leaving victims to drown in their own blood. Young victims and the elderly were vulnerable, but what was baffling about this new strand of the flu virus was how it struck otherwise healthy young men and women in the prime of their lives. These were the same boys the nation was sending to Europe to fight in World War I, and as such, the disease spread quickly among troops who were housed in barracks and traveled in close quarters. The first cases of the disease in Canby were reported the same week that the schools were shuttered. Two sons of a local man named William Earle were taken ill, their ages unknown. These first two were soon followed by a large number of new cases that appeared across the city and Clackamas County and quickly spread. Though it's not known if he was the first, one early flu victim in Canby was a young man, Herbert Johnson, who died at the Vancouver Barracks Hospital in Washington, where the area's first cases and from the second wave of the pandemic were treated. Johnson, whose age was not listed in the obituary in the Oregonian, died on November 7, 1918, barely 3 weeks after he had left home to enlist in the military service. He left behind two brothers, Ernest and Al Johnson. His remains were returned home, where internment will probably be at Canby, the obituary read. There was another recorded death that happened in Canby even earlier in the pandemic. It was also caused by the flu, albeit in a very different way. Ernest Perkins, 31, of West Lynn, was killed after being struck by a southbound train on the Southern Pacific tracks in Canby one early morning in October 1918. He was on his way to Salem to attend the funeral of a friend, John Bush, who had died from the influenza. At the point where the accident occurred, the road parallels the track for some distance, turning sharply at the crossing, the Oregonian reported. It is believed that Mr. Perkins was wholly unaware of the train coming behind him. The world, it could also be said, was wholly unaware of the train coming behind it. The Spanish flu infected a third of the world's population and killed at least 50 million people worldwide, 675,000 of them in the U.S. It was one of the deadliest events in human history. For a long, brutal fall and winter, the nation suffered. Then, on the morning of March 13, 1919, some good news finally came. The America had returned to port in New York City. The ship with the famed 13th Aero Squadron attached to it had left on December 4, 1917, bound for the battlefields of Europe. Its troops had been engaged in the Meuse-Argonne Offensive and the Battle of Saint-Mihiel and helped see the Allied powers through to a victorious end. "We worked behind the lines, but near the front most of the time," said the squad's color sergeant, Stuart McCrae of Salem. Many of the squad's members were from Oregon. But there is an excitement even at that. At night, we used to hide in shell holes and dugouts, and there were many nights that Fritz came out and bombed us. Fritz, of course, was a World War I era nickname for German soldiers. The Arrow's mission was to engage and clear enemy aircraft from the skies and provide escort and reconnaissance and bombardment squadrons over enemy territory. It also attacked enemy observation balloons, performed close air support and tactical bombing attacks, and even provided mechanical support and rescue in the heat of battle. When a plane is brought down in no man's land or gets out of order there, we are the boys who go out to fix it, said Arthur Savage of Grants Pass. And let me tell you, Fitz can snipe and shoot some. The squad was highly decorated for its service. Following the November 11th armistice of 1918, it was ordered back to the United States to be demobilized. The America's journey home, however, did not go as planned. In cramped and poorly ventilated conditions, an outbreak of the deadly flu took hold. The virus infected 105 men, at least four of whom died. The heroic work of Army surgeons, including Lieutenant W.A. Neal from Portland, saved countless lives and eventually brought the outbreak under control. The America docked, and its soldiers were transferred to Camp Mills in New Jersey for sanitation quarantine. On board was a boy from Canby and two from Morgan City. They had survived the mustard gas of the Aragon and the horrors of the Spanish flu. And they were going home.
This episode is brought to you by the Wild Hair Saloon in Canby in Oregon City. The coronavirus has changed much about how the Wild Hair does business, but it has not changed the where, the why, or who they do it for. Owners Joan and Darren Monin, both lifelong Canby residents, are as committed to the community they love as they've ever been. Even as the service industry has been deeply impacted by the current public health situation, they continue to rally behind Canby, its people, and especially those most in need. We are so grateful for their continued support in this difficult time. As we've always said, the Wild Hair is a place where Canby goes to eat and have fun. That hasn't really changed. You just have to take your food and, you know, go eat it somewhere else. Until the governor's stay-home orders expire, the Wild Hair's friendly staff will be there to handle your carry-out orders Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. They continue to offer their full menu of delicious food options, and they're doing a weekly meal deal that serves a family of four for only $25. Find the latest on their Facebook page, full menu available online at thewildhairsaloon.net. Give them a holler today at 503-651-4273.
The Canby Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joyce Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Canby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Canby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.